According to City Limits, this is now the Chris Hoak Show.
How about that?
This is unbelievable.
Yeah, the Chris Hoak Show on the Starkey Show.
Brought to us by
McVay Plumbing and Heating.
That's exactly right.
Thank you, McVay.
The last of the Hoakenians is sitting right in
the
front of me.
The last of the Hoakenians. I love it. You always have the greatest saying.
He's got the notebook going.
I got all my notes. You got to have color coordinated so things pop out, because if you have one color, man, nothing really makes sense.
So do you use one of those
Bic pens with all the colors around them? Uniball pens, and I got So I'm sitting there during the game. I got about four or five pens out.
Now, are those notes from last week's game or previewing the Broncos game?
This is Broncos game. If you go back a couple pages, I'm sorry here. If you go back a couple pages here, it's the whole game, right? And so you get the highlighter on big plays, and certain colors are like, you know, plays in a drive.
This is incrinculant.
Yeah, it's quite magnificent.
Well, in light of that, a thought just struck me. I'm going to ask you a random series of questions from the game last week. Seriously,
okay.
A given play, yep. You give whatever answer you want to give. They're off the top of my head at this point, because
sure.
It just sparked something in me. The offsides on TJ Watt that could have been a game-ruining play for the Steelers, because
the very next play was a touchdown pass.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Was it legal? Was he onside?
Listen, here's the reality, bro. Is that when you watch the game back, when you watch it in slow motion, instant replay, you go pixel by pixel, so you could see that he timed it perfectly. But the referees and the umpire do not have the vantage point that we have from watching it back, pixel by pixel. So you're going off just what you see. If you watch it real time, he looks offsides. It happened just a couple series earlier when Alex Highsmith was called for offsides and he got hit on the quarterback and they called it back for him being offsides. TJ Watts in real time looked offside. Even his brother said that this week when he was in an interview. JJ said that. It was so quick off the ball, it looked offsides. You just don't have the vantage point for the refs to go back and look at this thing in instant slow replay and overturn it.
Did you see an angle that showed that it was legal?
If you look at it, I mean, from a couple different angles. There's only one angle to me where it's coming from the offensive right side, kind of at a 45-degree angle where it may look like he's offside, but every other angle to me looks like he's onside. Just read it perfectly. And then the little golden nugget that he talked about was when the center goes down, it's a silent count in your home stadium, number one. That's crazy. But he was doing the center put his head down, came back up, and TJ caught that where they were going on a rhythm. That's why a lot of teams will go two double silent count on two, where you go down, you come back up, you come down, you come back up, so you don't get a beat on it. They had to have been going on just on one count, on the one head down, and TJ got it. And he read it perfectly if you watch it on instant replay.
Another decision that could have wrecked the game for the Steelers, if things had gone differently, the George Pickens offensive pass interference. Was that a good call?
That's a tough call. I could see, again, we're watching these plays. The referees are watching them in real time. And if you watch what happened, Pickens is running down, and he pushes off a little bit, not enough to write home to mom about, but he fades away to the sideline as he does it. Now, the corner, I don't think, moved very much. It's more of George Pickens separating himself to catch the ball, and it looked like when he pushed off, which, usually you think about getting extended, right?
I thought that was the rule.
Yeah, but what happened was it looked a lot worse than it really was, because when he pushed kindly, he faded away to the sideline, and it looked worse than it really was in real time again.
Right. Back to TJ Watt for a second. I think aside from take away the quarterback position, I think he's the most influential, valuable player in the NFL.
He changes the game. He really embodies the phrase game changer.
Yeah.
I mean, you come out in this game and the Falcons run to Highsmith's side the first series or two. They come back for very first play to TJ's side, TFL, tackle for a loss, right?
Yep.
They come to his side again the next time, he fumble recovery, right? It's just, for some reason, he just stokes fear in the opponent. And they a lot of times freeze up, and he is able to make plays. They're so worried about his speed and athletic ability that McCrary overreaches him on the first run. He's able to come inside. A lot of times, man, defensive line coaches, outside linebacker coaches do not like you coming inside, are taking a shortcut. he's able to come inside, get right back upfield, and get right back in position to make a play and a tackle for a loss. I mean, he's just a guy that it's very, very difficult to contain him.
How did Cam play, in your opinion?
I thought he played well.
Yeah.
I thought he played well. I mean, he didn't get a sack, but he played very, very well on the run. There's a huge difference. If you watch this film and go back and watch it, the way Cam plays defensive line versus the other guys. And look, Ogunjobi showed up. But Cam comes up. He plays with great technique, great pad level. He inverts the line of scrimmage. He very, very, very rarely is behind blocks. He's in his gap. A lot, you know, if you watch this film, the defense is a little leaky in the run. I'm going to be honest, right? They played well on Sunday. And so, I mean, if I'm going to find some kind of weakness, they were a little leaky in the run at times, and it was because the defensive linemen got behind their blocks. They got scooped out of their gaps. And the nose tackle position, we were a little soft in the run. And so made it very difficult for Patrick Queen to get over the top at times. And then the guys were getting blocked back into him. So they've got to improve their play at the nose tackle and the left defensive end position when they start playing against, you know, some of the more elite teams, or it'll bite them.
I thought Keanu Benton was going to be very noticeable and have a gigantic game, and that wasn't the case. How come?
Trying to make plays. I remember being a defensive lineman with the Steelers, and Coach Mitchell, the great Coach Mitchell, who's not there anymore, would always say, Hokie, I don't need you to make play. I need you to make your play. A lot of times when you try to make plays, what you're doing is you're getting soft, you're getting high, you're playing bad technique. If you play good technique, you're going to make plays. You're going to make your play. And if you remember in that first series, Tyler Allgeier went for 13 or 14 yards. You remember that? We went off left side.
Yeah.
And Benton was playing in the three technique over the outside shoulder of the guard to the defensive right, and he had perfect position. And then he swam inside to the A-gap. Tyler Allgeier goes right where he was and went for 13, 14 yards. If he just keeps pushing, stays in his gap, he has nowhere to go, right? So what happened was Benton, I think, came in here trying to make plays, and that's really a weakness for a lot of defensive linemen is when you try to make plays, you play bad technique, and you get out of your gap, and then you gash the defense, and that's what happened a couple of times. He was trying to make plays at the nose tackle position, stood him straight up. He got soft, got knocked off the ball into Queen. I don't expect that to become a pattern for him. I think they obviously know that happened because it's very clear on film. He'll get that cleaned up, but that was the story of his first game.
On the other side of the ball, in the middle of the line, I saw where Brian Baldinger had a breakdown of Zach Fraser with 8 knockdowns.
Yeah.
What did you see from him in his debut?
He played really well. Right, he played really well. He other than the couple snaps in that first drive, where who knows whose fault it was. You know, they're not going to come out and blame each other. And there was another time too where Justin Fields almost dropped the snap. He was tough at the point of attack, man. He gave up. I saw a stat that he had 29 pass snaps. He gave up 0 pressures. He gave up 0 hits to the quarterback, 0 sacks, 0 hurries.
Wow,
tough. I mean, and to be a rookie and be able to play like that. And Grady Jarrett had a great game. He was as explosive as I've seen him. And he played well against him and the other guys. And on the run game, he was physical. He's a guy that I think they can really build on their offensive line from the middle out for the next decade.
All right. And then the big one that people are still talking about, because he apparently is going to play again unless there's a change. How did you grade Justin Fields' performance?
I thought he played good enough, right? I thought he played good enough. You know what's interesting about him when you watch the film? He makes the difficult look easy and the easy look difficult.
Mm.
He struggles to make the routine throws at times. But then the deep ball, he hit Pickens, has some nice throws.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, if you look at the pass chart, he outside of all his balls were outside of the numbers. Nothing in the middle of the field. Reflective of what happened last year, right? I mean, a little bit, right? It showed us what they did. And so a lot of times that's because, you know, he's rolling out and all you can see is 1/3 of the field, right? And you're throwing there. And they did a lot of rollout with him. And then it kind of limits the impact of Freiermuth on the game too, because Freiermuth does some damage over the middle of the field, right? That's where he down the seam, down the middle. But you don't see a lot of throws going on quick slants over the middle, anything like that. Any kind of, you know, shallow crosses, mid-level crosses, none of that stuff that would expose the middle of the field.
So if Russell's healthy, would you go back to Russell? Or are you comfortable with Fields?
I think, as you said today, I would say yes. But as time goes on, I think Coach Tomlin really likes Justin Fields.
So do I.
I think he's wanted a quarterback like him for a long time. A big, strong, athletic quarterback who can scramble. and has a strong arm. And every coach feels like they can help a quarterback get to the next level, or any player get to the next level. And so they, you know, help him, tweak him a little bit, help him throw with a little more anticipation. But look, in this game, this is kind of the kind of player that Coach Tomlin loves. They had 9 first down runs in this game. 5 of those were Justin Fields at quarterback. He ran 5 first down runs, and those weren't like, you know, hey, I'm just going to scram. They were designed, a lot of them were designed runs, and he got the first downs and big moments in the second half that sustained drives. That's part of the reason why they were 47% on third down in this game, and that's the reason why the Falcons struggled to get anything going in the second half, and any kind of rhythm, any kind of momentum, is because they dominated them defensively, but really third downs was a big part of that, and they dominated the time of possession.
So it sounds like we agree on this, that if Justin Fields comes out and has a great game in Denver, it's not going to matter if Russell Wilson's
out. I think it's going to make things more challenging. Here's another angle of this, right? Russ Wilson has a long history in the NFL. I think he's a Hall of Fame quarterback. Yeah. The reality is he has no credit with the Steelers, if you will, right? I mean, he wasn't drafted here. They didn't give him a big signing bonus, which are elements, are reasons why he would come back and play, right?
Yeah.
They didn't give up any draft capital. He wasn't a first or second round draft pick where they feel like, hey, we got to justify the pick, which you see a lot of times, right, in the NFL. We didn't give him a big signing bonus. None of those things are part of this. And so you say, well, you know, we don't owe him. We don't have to look good as a coach. It won't make me look bad if I don't play him, right? And also, we don't owe him anything. We don't have any loyalty to him. And so the reality is Coach Tom's looking at this going, I kind of like Justin Fields. If we're winning and he's not turning the ball over and he's kind of the quarterback that I've wanted for a long time, I think Coach Tomlin rolls with him.
So do I. So do I. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates Personal Injury Law Firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And the fan hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. We were talking earlier, Hokie, we have Super Bowl champion Chris Hoke in with us, as we do every Thursday, about the O-line yesterday at practice with Fotanu on the right, Broderick Jones on the left, and whether it just makes, and that's because Dan Moore has swollen ankle, but does it just make sense to roll with this now?
No.
No? Okay.
I think Dan Moore Jr. is still the best offensive tackle right now. If he wasn't, the other guys would be starting.
Did Jones play well?
I think he played good enough. Right. I don't think he played better than Dan Moore Jr. Dan's playing well, good football. Right. I mean, there's a reason why nobody's beat him out yet. Right. And I just think that leave him there at the left tackle. If he can't play, he can't play. Right. But I mean, you don't hear a lot about Dan Moore Jr. You don't hear a lot about the guys playing over him because he shuts him down. This is more of an offense that fits his personality. He's a big physical guy. If you look at him next to Broderick Jones and Fautanu, and he's bigger than them.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a specimen. He's a big man. And so this physical kind of play fits his personality, his playing personality more. And so you look at it, I don't think that just because he's injured, he's going to lose his spot, because I think right now he's better than both of those guys. I could see a scenario play out where if he got hurt for an extended period of time, they go in and we got these first-round draft picks. It makes sense to roll because we don't have Dan Moore Jr. under contract next year. But I can see this play out where Dan Moore plays that left tackle for the rest of the year. They can't pay him, and so they move. You know, now they make the adjustment. They have 2 first-rounders. They roll with him for the next several years. But right now, if they were better, they'd be starting over him.
Late in the game, Steelers have a chance to go up 8 with a field goal, a chip shot, compared to what the guy was doing for the whole day.
Yeah.
And they go for it on 4th-and-1. Did you like that decision?
I don't have a problem with it. I see the other side of it, though. I see the debate, right? Because you think, okay, you take a field goal there, you're up 8 points, and then they got to go down and score. A couple things come to mind when I think about this. Coach Tomlin always rides the momentum wave, doesn't he? He always sticks. Momentum was they dominated that drive. That fourth down play was the 13th play of that drive.
Yeah.
And I would say all but a couple of those plays were runs, right? And so they were still in their dirt. I mean, they were getting after them, the Falcons. And so in his mind, they were going to get that. Now, I think Justin Fields should have seen that they had every Tom, Dick, and Harry in the middle of the line of scrimmage, and they had both linebackers. They knew that quarterback sneak was coming. I wish he would have audibled out of that and just or just stepped out and tried to go to the B gap or the C gap. I mean, they had everybody pointing right between the A gaps. So that's one. Number two, the defense was dominating in that half. I mean, if you look at right now the stats that were in that second half, I mean, Kirk Cousins had he was 3 for 8 for 18 yards in that second half.
Wow.
They had 21 plays for 50 yards in the second half. Okay? They were getting after the Falcons. And so he's thinking, my defense is dominating. I take this right here and I get this first down. I milk more of the clock. I end up getting a touchdown. And now I'm up by 15, right? Or whatever. My math's bad. 12. That's really bad math, Starkey. But if you're up by 5, you get 7, you're up by 12, two-score game, it's over.
Yeah.
Right? And the momentum was that they were moving the chains and they were moving them. And he had a defense dominating, and the defense did exactly what he wanted them to do. They didn't get the first down. They came back and got 3 and out. Put the ball right back in the offense's hands. And that's what a good team does, is they complement each other. I've talked about that over the years, is if the offense doesn't get a first down, the defense comes out and gets the ball back to the offense. If the defense gives up a touchdown, the offense comes out and gets a long drive to give them a rest, goes down and scores. Good teams complement each other and help each other out and lift each other up when they need to be. And in that moment, that's what the Steelers defense did.
Initial impression of the Arthur Smith offense. In what ways did it look different to you?
Well, I think here it didn't look, I think different in the sense of personnel. And there were a few wrinkles, but if you look at it felt like it was the same, right? It felt like it was the same, but I think it's early. I love them going with a lot of tight ends, being more of a physical smash mouth team, and they want to pound the football. But again, you look at the stats, you look at the passing chart, it's a lot of the same things, but I believe that it'll continue to improve and get better. And there was creative. I saw a play when I was watching the film where he came out with, I think, 4 tight ends. And then it was late in the game, and then they went. He motioned to empty, and all of a sudden there were four tight ends out and a receiver, and he was in the backfield in all by himself, and he ran a quarterback draw for a first down, and they had to adjust with 4 tight ends. You very rarely see 4 tight ends.
Yeah.
They had to line up and adjust defensively, and it left 3 defensive linemen in the box. He easily got a first down on that and a quarterback draw. It's just those kind of things that put defenses, make them scratch their head and hesitate for a second, that gives you the advantage.
You don't get that anywhere else but from the Hokinator, Dr. Hokenstein. Am I right, Limits?
No, it's been a great first start to the show.
Well, let's get into the Broncos next.
Yeah.